You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show. My name is Charles Rose Jr., and we focus on breaking through limitations and barriers to get you to that next level of investing. With me is William Palmer, my amazing co-host. And in today's episode, our guest will be talking about how she flipped 24 properties in her first 2 years and overcame obstacles to become a successful breakthrough investor.
She'll also be talking about turnkey rental properties and how she scaled her business to over 2,000 real estate transactions. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show, where we guide you to financial freedom and break barriers in your investing to give you the secrets to success. And now, here are your hosts, Charles Rose Jr. and William Palmer.
William, what's up, buddy?
Not much, Charles. It's been a great day outside. Nice 40 degrees and sunny. How are you doing?
Man, I'm doing well, man. I won't tell you the temperature where I'm at in the Dominican Republic. I don't want to make you jealous and we start the show off with the wrong energy.
To stay on friendly terms for this podcast, I think would probably be good.
I think so. And because, you know, this next guest is absolutely amazing. And I'm just so super excited. And we're so blessed to be interviewing her, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm really excited to hear she started Cash Flow Savvy. So not to like throw her name out there before you do the intro or anything, but started Cash Flow Savvy. It's really, really neat. Looked into it a little bit. Really interested to hear what motivated her to start that and get that off the ground. And then the fact that she's, I think it flipped 24 houses or so in her first year, which is like, I don't know if any of you have flipped houses before. That blows my mind because I've done remodels and it takes time and it takes a lot of understanding what's going on. So I'm really, really curious to hear how in the world she started off the bat with that. And then 2,000 plus real estate transactions to her name, which is just absolutely mind-blowing. So very, very excited about this interview.
Man, it's mind-blowing too. Like when I heard that too, I was like, wow. And, you know, I have to meet this person. And just if I could just, you know, get a piece of her wisdom, my life would be so much better, right? I think so. We're being a little bit selfish today, right, William?
Yeah, pretty much. We getting to interview these people is absolutely fantastic. And I almost feel bad being a co-host because I get to get as much information as possible. So it's a little bit of selfishness on our parts, I think.
I think it's okay, though. You know, the listeners, they're still benefiting, right?
I think so. That's what we tell ourselves.
That's what we tell ourselves. And so the other cool thing, William, is our guest, you know, she is so passionate about helping people and just taking them from, I love how she says, this isn't possible, to finally I've escaped the rat race. And as I listen to her share these stories, like she literally get emotional and shed tears of joy every time she shares stories. And that's how passionate she is. And because she's so passionate, she does so many things to help people. She's the co-host of the Epic Real Estate Investors podcast, where they show you how to create wealth through conventional and creative is real estate investing while improving your financial education. I mean, she is like a legend in the podcast space in my book. Seriously, like, you know, their podcast has been around a long time and literally gets over 250 downloads per month. Can you believe that? 250,000. Did I say 1,000 or 250,000?
That is a crazy number. That is an absolute.
I know that was a lot, but you know, because she's done a lot. And so, you know, we had to mention those things and it's so much more. We're going to hear directly from her today. And, you know, above all, she is a wife and a mother, which is the most important thing to her. Just listening to you on other platforms and just everything that you do to help people. And your energy is just so infectious and we love it. And so we're super excited. Like a lot of people already know you, but for those, they're going to want to hear your story. Just like, you know, William and I enjoy hearing your story every time we listen to you on a different platform. Tell us more about your investing journey and what initially made you want to do it.
You know, let me just start with the energy because I'm Puerto Rican, half Mexican. And we just have energy like for everyone. So thank you. There isn't a bad day in our space because If not, we just turn on some salsa music and it just turns into food. So let's talk about that. You know, I started my journey, and I will say on accident, but the reality is the core of why I started this journey is because I grew up really poor. You know, finances were never talked about in our home because there was very little of it. And so what ended up happening is at 12 years old, I remember one day I saw my mom, she used to collect coins, and that was just her thing. And one day I was a big breakfast eater. I still am. And I would have 2 over easy eggs, 2 pieces of toast, and chocolate milk. And my mother didn't have money to buy chocolate milk. So she had to go to her coin collection and run, you know, get one of her coins and go to the corner store to buy a gallon of milk so that I would have milk for the week. And I was 12, so I was old enough to reason that something was up. And I just realized we're poor. But there was so much love in our house and a lot of salsa music that I never felt it. I saw it when I was old enough to figure it out. And so, you know, I we're immigrants per se. You know, Puerto Rico is part of the United States, but we still got here to California. And when we were poor, I didn't know that until I started to compare myself and, like, you know, with the kids at school and not so much, you know. So I took, like, right after high school, I didn't go to college back until I was 25. And it was because I was working for corporate America. I had an older boyfriend that said to me, you need to go back to school, get a degree in business and figure it out. So I did that. I didn't go back to school till I was 25. And then by the time that I was 29, I got into law school. I got a full scholarship and I was like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. First day of law school, hated it. Hated it. But how was I going to give up a full ride when nobody in my family had ever had that? So the reality was, okay, what am I going to do with this? And so one of my girlfriends, she was working for corporate America. She was working for a Countrywide back in the day, a paper. And I said, get me a job at the bank. And so she did. She got me a job. I started at the bottom, like literally I was a doc preparer. I would draw docs on DOS. Like DOS doesn't even exist anymore. I then grew up, you know, went up the corporate ladder, but I ended up working for a subprime bank called First Franklin. It was a bank from Merrill Lynch. And I was doing subprime loans, and I started to see people doing loans or, you know, buying properties. I mean, like mechanics and teachers, people that were barely making like $35,000 a year. And I was like, wait a minute, they're buying houses. And then 6 months later, they're pulling the money out and then buying another property. So it didn't take me long to figure out, okay, there's a way of doing this. And so my boss kind of became my mentor. And she's like, yeah, Mercedes, you can buy a house and then you can fix it up and sell it. So of course I had access to getting qualified at the bank, and I did my very first flip. Here into my career as a subprime banker. And the reality is I was making about $30,000 a year at my corporate job working for the bank. On my first flip, I made $86,000. This is it. And I just became obsessed. So having, you know, a job at the bank, I was a W-2 employee. I just kept doing them one after another. And I learned how to buy properties owner occupied and then selling it for a profit and kept doing it over and over again. Well, in 2008, the market turned and the reality was, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? The market is now upside down. By that time, I had read a miraculous book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, where it taught me how to have my money work for me. I was living in California. There was no way in the world I was going to be able to cash flow in California. So when the market turned in 2008, I was really, really lucky. I was only doing one flip at that time. And I thought I was going to make about $60,000. I ended up making about $12,000. And I was like, okay, I have to shift. So it was at that point that I realized, okay, there's markets in middle America where the purchase price and the rent ratio are going to give me the return that I need for my money to work for me. And so I started, you know, I created an algorithm. This is back in 2008, 2009. And I just looked for markets in middle America that were going to serve my cash flow needs. I needed an ROI. I was just looking at that. I knew that people in middle America needed a roof over their heads too. And so I was like, okay, what do people rent? How much do people make? What are the numbers? And I just scrutinized it. And it was just to get me to cash flow. Long story short is I did one property. I started in Danville, Illinois. Then I went to Memphis, Tennessee, and I started growing that part of the our business. But what I really came to realize is that, oh my goodness, if you do this and you create a system, how many people am I helping by providing a roof? And how many investors am I creating a legacy for? So that's when it kind of came all together. People were then like, how are you living in California and buying rentals in Memphis or in Indianapolis and, you know, all these places? And I started to teach it because there was nothing. All I wanted to do was to share that if I did it, holy cow, anybody could do it. And then people, you know, we started to teach this. And when we started to teach it, people would say, oh my God, that's just so much work. Can you just do it for me? So before I knew it, I was starting to sell my cash flow. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm selling my own cash flow. But the reality was, it's like, you know what? It's a system. And if I perfect it, I could offer the world something different, not only to people that need to rent, but to people that want to create financial freedom. So in a nutshell, that's Mercedes Torres and Cashflow Savvy, or at least how the business was born.
Wow, that's awesome. What a dramatic difference from how you started, 24 flips in 1 year, and then you go to that. That's a crazy transition.
Yeah. Well, you know, William, what I really learned, and, you know, thanks to the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, with the flips, I loved it because who doesn't love a lump sum of $86,000? I mean, I was flipping in California. So the most I made on one flip was like $140,000. But I was always constantly chasing the flip. And I don't know about you, William, but working with contractors in heels, in my red lipstick, it was just like, you know what? I reached my cap at like 24.
Well, I'll have to give it to you. I've never worn heels and red lipstick, so that's your arena.
But you know what? Contractors thought I was a total idiot. And then when I started to tell them, okay, well, you need this much carpet and you need this much paint, and I was telling them how much it should cost them, they're like, holy cow, this girl really knows what she's talking about. I'm like, well, I've done enough. But I got the attention of national TV. I was on a show called Flip That House back in A&E back in the day in 2009. And such idiots, you guys. I mean, I was offered the opportunity to do a series. They wanted me to do like the whole season and they were just in my way. And I'm like, you're in my way. You're just like costing me money. I never thought that this was going to be like a business, right? So now I'm at the flip show. Yeah. So I said, no, thank you, like an idiot, and walked away. Probably the best decision of my life, because had I done it, I would have never had, you know, Cashflow Savvy and Epic Real Estate. But the reality is that I never did this for any other reason other than just to create financial freedom for my family. Because my dream was to support my mother and my father. And that's all I really wanted to do. And I was making $30,000 a year in California. Like, how was I going to do that? So that was just a vehicle for me. And, you know, there's a lot of naysayers that are like, oh yeah, you know, you're an investor and you make a lot of money. And some people shame us for that. But I don't see it that way, because I'm like, I'm helping so many people. Yes, I'm buying a house from a motivated seller, but they need to sell because there's a death, a divorce, a reason. And I want to provide a quality home for someone, but I also want to provide a living for my family. So, and on top of that, if you want to learn how to do it, honey, come to me. I will teach you. And if not, I will do it for you. So, you know, people can call me selfish all day long, but all I want to do is share what I did. Because if I did it, why can't you? Why can't anybody?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's more than enough to go around too. It's unbelievable.
Seriously. And it's just amazing to hear your story and how you went through that whole journey from growing up poor to doing this for your family. But you know, what I love too is you've put your family in such a great place and you help so many other people. Can you share some of those stories of how you help people achieve the same financial freedom? Because I think our listeners, they're going to, you know, they're looking at your story like, wow, she is amazing. Like, I want to do what she did. What kind of advice would you give our listeners to get to that place where they can be financially free through real estate?
You know what I tell? So Matt is my husband, by the way. So Matt Terrio and Mercedes Torres created this for themselves, because what we learned is that real estate is the final frontier where the average person has a legitimate chance of creating real wealth. So our mission was to teach people how to do that. And so many people that come to us are full-time something else. They're W-2 employees or they run their own business. And I just say, listen, all you have to do is just buy one rental property a year, just one. And I mean, money is available out there, people. All you have to do is know how to look for it, where to find it. And that's what we're all here for. But the reality is, all you need is a 20% down payment to buy a property. And there are properties out in middle America that are $100,000. So you need $20,000 for a down payment plus about $5,000 in closing costs. So with $25,000, you can buy one property that could potentially cash flow you if you buy it right and create and start creating the legacy if you hold it. Because if you hold that property for 5 years and you put a renter in it, your renter pays your mortgage, pays you rent, and that rent pays your mortgage, pays the taxes, pays the insurance, pays the property management, and then there's some money for you to put away if you buy it right. Key thing there, you have to buy it right.
You gotta buy it right. So what do you mean by buy it right? Can you break that down further? I think, you know, people listening, like, what's a right investment? Is it for appreciation? Is it for cash flow? What is a right investment for you?
Well, it depends on what your goal is. But at the end of the day, right means if the numbers produce the result that you want. So in my case, I wanted cash flow. There's nothing, no sugarcoating with cash flow. It's numbers, it's pluses and minuses. So I knew that I had to buy a property that was going to rent for enough money that was going to cover the mortgage, the taxes, the insurance, the property management, and then put money away for a rainy day, just in case funds, and then have a little bit left over. And for me, that little bit, I was happy with $200 a month in cash flow. Now, nowadays, some of my cash flow is $500 a month per property, $900. So I've grown it. But when I started, I was very okay with a little bit of money because what I was looking at was, okay, if I hold this asset for 10 years minimum, I hold my stuff forever, but for 10 years minimum, what is that property going to look like in 10 years? Well, guys, it's not rocket science. History repeats itself. The market appreciates. Just if you look generally speaking, yeah, we had our ups and downs in 2008, it crashed. And COVID, you know, property values went crazy. But the reality is if you hold an asset, chances are like a 99.9% that asset is going to appreciate. So if you buy it with the numbers that produce a return for you from the onset, chances are that in 5 years, you not only cash flowed for 5 years, you now created appreciation. Oh, and by the way, there was tax benefits the entire time you were holding the asset. Oh, and by the way, your tenant paid the rent and that rent paid the mortgage. I mean, holy cow, you guys, I get so excited about this stuff. I mean, it just, because it's a no-brainer. All you have to do is buy it and hold it. And here's the greatest thing, Charles, is that people say to me, well, I don't have $20,000. Well, I didn't say it had to be your $20,000. It could be anybody's $20,000. Money in a 401k that you think that you can't touch. That's another conversation, whole different podcast about that. But 401k money, old IRA money, if you've retired from an old job or, you know, if you just retired, period. Or what about your brother's IRA that's making him a whopping 1%? What if you borrowed your brother's IRA and you borrowed it paying him 5% when your property is producing a 9%? I mean, the numbers aren't difficult to analyze. You're making 4% on a completely leveraged property. In 5 years, that 4% is going to be a lot more than your 4%. And your brother's going to be really happy because there's no way in the world that the IRA is going to give him more than, you know, 1% at that. So the reality is it's really easy. You just have to want to think outside the box because what you and I and what we're all doing, it's not regular thinking. Unfortunately, it's not taught in schools.
That's another topic. That's a whole podcast.
We create our own podcast.
So Mercedes, I get asked all the time. I literally got asked, I think it was a week and a half or so ago, am I too old to start investing? Because I had somebody ask me that and I couldn't believe that, because to me, I'm like, you're never too old to start investing. Not ever.
You're never too old. Well, first of all, my oldest client was 72 years old. I was able to find him 12 properties in 2 years. And his goal, he had 12 grandchildren, and his goal was to buy one property for each of his grandchildren. I did that in a little, like 18 months. But so no, you're never too old. And the reality is, may I share a story about what happened to my son? I got pregnant late in life, ladies and gentlemen, at 40, because I was doing real estate. I thought I was I was crazy doing real estate, but I had my baby at 40. And I remember when my child was born, I had a C-section. I was in the hospital for 5 days. And I looked at this child and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to feed you. I'm going to have to pay for your college. I'm going to have to pay for your wedding. And I'm going to have to pay for your first car, because I'm in the hospital for 5 days, right? And so I always have deals coming to us. So I decided that I was going to buy my first property for him, because I didn't want to pay for his college education. I wanted a property to pay for his college education. So literally at the hospital, because I was there for 5 days, I signed docs. I had a notary come to the hospital. I know the documents. No joke. And Mateo owned his first property when he was like 5 days old. When he left the hospital, he was already a property owner. Long story short, Mateo is now 12 years old. At 5 years old, I refinanced that property. I pulled out enough money, because remember, I had the college, I had the wedding, and I have the first car. So I established the college fund with the first property. I now had enough equity to buy a second property to cover the wedding, right? So I know girls' parents are supposed to pay for the wedding, but I'm going to pay for the wedding. So I bought the second property with that. Then he's now 12 years old. When he was at 11, that's when COVID happened and the rates were like bonkers and I pulled more money out. He now has 3 properties and the kid is 12 years old. So because financialness is not taught in schools, he's now learning how to balance a checkbook like old school. Because I'm like, no one's going to teach you this if mommy and daddy don't teach you this. So he sees his rents coming in. He sees the property management, module. He's like, why did they take $100 from my rent? Well, there you go. So now he has a bank account.
Good question.
Yeah, but I'm teaching it to him, because if I don't teach it to him, who's going to?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a firm believer in that. I think we talk about this on another podcast, Charles, but one of my goals is to have one house for each one of my kids. And then when they're old enough to understand or mature enough, they're going to have a house and they can decide, are they going to take that? Are they going to live in it? Are they going to sell it? Are they going to use it to start their own business? And my whole goal is to teach them how to do it, so that way they don't need to work a job if they don't want to. They already have the knowledge that they need to go out on their own.
And wait till they start talking back to you, because he's like, well, I own 3 properties, mommy.
Well, my oldest is 5. She already talks back.
and Mercedes, like, you're a Hispanic mom, so I know you teach him right and put him in his place. Boy, you better learn.
In a second.
Yeah, you should meet my wife, Charles. You don't understand.
What's that?
My wife doesn't put up with that either. So
yeah. Well, William, you're a country boy. So people from the country, I realize they don't play, and then people from the island too. We don't play around. We've got. I love it. I just love talking about this generational wealth that real estate allows. And so my wife and I, we're in the process of buying our first international investment property here in the Dominican Republic. And we brought our baby in and we put like a pen in her hand. We put the cap on so she don't mess up the documents and took a picture, because we want to start her and train her early. And so it's so amazing that you're not only are you using this to grow your business and helping other people, but you're also helping your son and creating that generational wealth. So I think that's amazing. So, but Mercedes, a lot of people, maybe looking at real estate right now and they're like, man, interest rates are too high. During COVID, they were at, 2%, 3%. And this is like, literally stopping some people from moving forward. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, for those people who are sitting on the sidelines and not buying because of the high interest rates.
Sitting on the sidelines is the worst thing that you could ever do. Like, doing nothing is just such a hindrance to humanity. So like that doesn't even compute in my brain. But what I say about interest rates, well, here's what I'm going to say about that. We got extremely spoiled during COVID. COVID was a pandemic. It is never going to happen in our lifetime again. And I don't mean a pandemic. I mean the rates dropping that low. I mean, rates got to 2 to 3%. It is financially impossible for our nation to allow rates to go down that low. Now, rates right now, 7, 8%. Okay. I started investing and rates were at 14%. Rates are not going to drop down that low. But that goes back to the buying right. Rates aren't going to drop low, but they're likely going to spike up. Now, for the year of the elections, it's probably going to stay stable, but they're not going to come down again. So when rates go to 12%, you're going to wish that you bought five properties at 8%. Here's what I say about that. If you buy right, going back to the numbers, and you're still cash flowing, even if it's a 1%, 2%, when you close, the reality is that if the rates drop, then you refinance. Like, that's a no-brainer. But if the rates increase, you're going to be like, holy cow, I'm so happy I listened to that Mercedes girl because now I have five properties at 8%. History repeats itself. And just with inflation, what the world is doing, it is mathematically impossible for rates to drop down to what they were before. They might drop a little bit, but not so much that it's going to change your world. So sitting on the sidelines, how is that going to serve you? But think about this. If you lock in something at the high rate of 8%, and I said that in quotes for a reason, and you're cash flowing today, okay, at let's just say you're cash flowing $50, the worst possible scenario. Like, it's not even going to support my Starbucks habit, right? $50 a month. But then next year, when your rents get or when your tenant renews their lease, the rent is going to go up. So now all of a sudden, although you were only cash flowing $50 the first year, next year with the increase in rate, you're now cash flowing $100. Year three, you're now cash flowing $150. The rate stayed the same. So like, it goes back to the numbers. Don't let the peddly stuff stand in the way of creating a financial future for yourself. If you don't do it for yourself, who the heck's going to do it for you?
Mercedes, what's maybe some of those breakthrough moments that you've had in your investing career? What have been some of those things, that those hurdles, things you had to get over, like maybe a mindset or a mind shift, a change that you were like, I got to change something else, or maybe something forced your hand into doing that? What are maybe one or two of those things that kind of changed the game?
Yeah, great question, William. First thing is, living paycheck to paycheck sucks. Like, it is not okay to have to think about if you can buy food next week. That's not okay. And I realized that if I didn't make the change in my family for my nieces and my nephews, if I didn't set the example, how were we going to overachieve that? But the mindset, William, was everything. And the only reason I was able to get past that hump, and I say that candidly all the time, is because when I was working for corporate America in the subprime bank, I saw babysitters and mechanics and teachers that were just making ends meet buying a house. And then I saw what it did 6 months later when they refinanced and bought a rental property, because now that just became income for them. And that income allowed them to qualify for something else. But what it taught me was, if a babysitter can do it, if a mechanic can do it, if a teacher, which by the way, teachers are completely underpaid and undervalued, but if they can do it, why can't I? I was making the same thing that they were. So I had to see it from somebody else's perspective. And of course, when it's not your money, you don't feel it so much. But then when at the end of the month, I was barely able to make my rent, living in California, making $30,000, I'm like, this has got to change. And it was the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that made me see there's another way. And it was my boss that said to me, Rhonda Kaur, I don't even know if she knows the impact she had on me. I was working at First Franklin and she said, go and buy a house and then sell it. And it was when I physically did it and I was scared out of my mind because that was the only money I had. But then I saw what it gave me. like over $80,000, I was like, whoa. And so I had to overcome the belief that I could do it too.
Mercedes, this has been absolutely amazing. But more than likely, maybe we missed something. Is there anything we miss so that our audience can become a breakthrough investor just like you?
I wish when I started, there was somebody there to hold my hand. Now, I'm biased. I happen to think that what I did and my operation, Cashflow Savvy, is the best because I invest in the same markets where I provide it for my clients. The reality is that whether you use me, Cashflow Savvy, or any other turnkey provider out there, I don't care who you use, just do it. Align yourself with somebody that has already done it for your first, second, third time. Hell, I have clients that have bought more than 10 properties from me because they know how much work it is and I do it all for them. So if you're scared of that, if you're scared of taking the first step, that's what, you know, Dustin is there for. That's what you guys are there for. That's what I'm here for, to help you walk through those hurdles because they're scary as all heck. But if you don't go through them, then how are you ever going to improve your financial situation if you don't take that leap of faith? Now, the leap of faith is really with a company that's already established. Like, you see us all over the internet, you hear us on the podcast, do it with someone that's already doing it, but do it. Because doing nothing will keep you in the same exact place that you're at. And that's not okay.
That is definitely not okay. This is awesome, man. It's just, your energy is just flowing through this whole episode. And I know that our listeners are going to, like, you know, when they listen to this, they're going to like be so excited, you know, put on some salsa music if they have to get going.
I hope you put salsa music in the background. It should
be everything. Willie, we need to do that. Like, seriously, we need to put some salsa music in the background.
Yeah, let me make a note. Just be like, Dustin, play salsa music in the background of this episode.
Yes, absolutely. So, Mercedes, so I know William and I are just mind-blowing, and we plan to listen to you more, follow you, and just, you know, dive into your content. But other people are going to want to do that too. So how can they find you online? How can they connect with you if someone is listening to this episode and they want more?
Yeah. So the best thing to do is twofold. Go to cashflowsavvy.com. That's savvy with two V's. That's our turnkey operation. That's where we hold your hand, walk you through the entire process of having you create financial freedom and cash flow in your life. And then listen to our podcast. My husband and I do a podcast together. It's called Epic Real Estate Investing Podcast. You see our beautiful pictures on the cover, but we really dive into just the world of real estate. We do a couples episode and then we do individual episodes. And it's really just to teach people that what I do is possible for you too. So
fantastic.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mercedes. It's been great having you on the show. And we're going to see you at RubeCon next year. I was so excited when Dustin mentioned that you're coming.
And I'm going to have salsa music when I run down the aisle.
You bet. Man, we need to do like a salsa night or something like that. I'm going to talk to Dustin about that.
We can start with mojitos. It'll be perfect. I will be speaking. I will be teaching about cash flow, about how to have it work for you, about how to acquire your first rental property. We're all about spreading the wealth, spreading the knowledge. So I will be there and I hope to see you guys there too.
Sounds great.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We'll see you soon.
Awesome. You're welcome. Have a great day, guys.